Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, gentlemen, we are just about a week and a half away from International Tabletop Day.
I'm terrified.
It's going to be fun.
Oh, wait. No, that's right. I'm excited.
International Tabletop Day will be coming up on Saturday, April 30th. We were running games from 12:30 up to 9. We're going to close out things starting about 6:30 with a big super fight tournament. Mm-hmm. We're going to play, trying to think of all the games like Birds of a Feather that I mentioned that was really fun. Awesome Kingdom, which I played recently, which was a lot of fun. Plus old standbys like Machikoro.
Star Realms.
DC Deck Building, Red Dragon Inn. So new games and old definitely come out. Should be a whole lot of fun. And
there was a customer asking about it yesterday, and he was kind of looking for some specific details after having looked at the poster. He was like asking, he's like, it said y'all were getting some exclusive promos, and I was like, let me go check and see what. So I can. He also wanted to know what games they were, and I couldn't remember off the top of my head. So well, I'm looking it up on our site, and it lists the promos.
It lists everything. I'm on top of it.
I guess so. These people need to look at the website and not bother me with their petty questions.
And this is why Dave's not allowed to talk to people anymore. We did shoot a promo this week for International Tabletop Day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they're also going to be streaming live on Twitch TV, which is the reason, one of the main reasons we got a TV in the store now.
And what is Twitch TV specifically?
So Twitch TV is where people can stream a lot of those video games, people live playing video games, but they also have board games and kind of fun stuff. So basically, they will be live streaming from Geek & Sundry playing board games all day for International Tabletop Day. Uh-huh. So you can watch that in store of people playing games and whatever. I'm sure they'll have other fun stuff. And they'll be putting up teasers and promo videos from people that sent them in. So we made one to send in, which we are pretty sure is going to wind up on the live stream because they all were pretty happy. They liked it. And you can see it right now if you come in the store or if you go to our new YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And it's just a 1 minute long.
Do we have our YouTube channel like just
accessible? Our YouTube channel. Yeah, nice. You can go to your YouTube channel of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, and we have a channel. There's about 4 videos on there right now, one of which is the events calendar, which would probably be really boring to watch in your home, but you're welcome to. The other one is a Tabletop Day trailer we made with a few of our friends, Nathan Killian, Chris Jones, Greg Norwood, and Jose Alva. And
can we say what the theme is?
Yeah, it's basically what not to do on Tabletop Day.
Yeah, sort of a what not to do in general in board games.
Yeah, and it's sort of a fun, goofy trailer. And
a minute long or something.
It's a minute long. I was really happy the way it came out. Yeah. I think it's kind of fun. You can go check that out. I'll put a link up in our show notes as well.
I was also entertained listening to y'all film it because I was in the store Yeah, you know, you listen to y'all scare the customers.
Yes,
yes. It was good times.
Yeah, it was fun. Then, of course, the week after that, May 7th, is Free Comic Book Day. And so let me talk about Thursday. So Thursday's a day when all 3 managers work. You should get a lot done. So this last Thursday, Dave had a vacation day that he put in months ahead of time, or at least weeks, a long time ago.
Yeah.
And then Nick had sort of a last-minute very important thing where he had to go see Civil War earlier because he's a bastard and we hate him.
That's true. And also, he's not going to be able to make it when we go see it.
Yeah, more to the point, he's not going to be able to see it when we see it because he's got a wedding to go to.
Nick didn't turn down an opportunity to see it weeks early.
And his awesome wife got him in to see Civil War. We will not be talking about Civil War in this podcast. Nick is forbidden from speaking about it because we want no spoilers, not even an indication.
He's grinning enigmatically.
So that probably means it was great.
Or is it a wry grin? Because it sucks so hard.
Hey, this is, you saw Avengers like 2 or 3
I
weeks
did.
Early, and
yeah.
I saw Serenity way before, and I didn't give away anything.
Yeah,
so
I'm not giving away anything. Yeah.
Now, Randy, while Nick and I were off enjoying ourselves,
but yes, my story.
Well, what did you do?
Well,
I hope you got some paperwork done.
What I got was our reorders for the week came in late that week, so we had to do that on Thursday. Which Nick was here for that, and we finished that up, and then they delivered our Free Comic Book Day comics, which. Just so you guys know, I happen to know for some reason that we're getting about 6,000 Free Comic Book Day comics this year.
Yeah.
And the reason I know that, and the reason I know about 6,000 comics weighs about 800 pounds, because I had to move them from UPS to a car, to the car, to the store, and then count them all, and then put them all back in boxes and sort them. So I did that by myself on Thursday.
Randy, this is probably going to be one of those things that you're going to want to think about when somebody kind of comes into the store, wanders around. So usually kind of stoned looking and says, y'all hiring? oh, I really love a job like this. I bet you just sit around all day and read comics.
Yeah, yeah. As you know, this job is mostly sitting around reading comics, not, lifting 800 pounds of boxes and counting 6,000 individual comics. Yeah. But the upshot of this is I have seen all the comics that are coming in. I have not had a chance to read everything, but the assortment is great this year. It's going to be so much fun, and we are going to go through and try and read and give you guys an overview of our favorites next week's podcast.
Yep, I've already started reading through some of them, so...
Yep, so expect that on next week's podcast, but long and short of it, Free Comic Book Day, May 7th, do not miss it.
Big fun excitement.
Then on May 24th, we are doing our midnight release for Comics Party, which is going to be, as we explained, DC Rebirth is coming out that day. That is the $2.99... 80-page special.
Entry point into all things DC.
Yeah. That's sort of a... people have asked if it's under the reboot or that kind of thing. And what I've said is basically it's more of a course correction.
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's probably what I would say is like if New 52 has not 100% been hitting what you want, which seems like for a lot of people it's not, Rebirth is sort of a... Let's steer a little bit about what people missed when we did New 52.
Yeah.
And hopefully keep the stuff people liked about it.
I really have to say, the more and more I hear about the DC Rebirth, the more and more interested I am. I mean, just with all like the storylines that we're seeing and that have been released in previews and sort of the solicits.
And you know what else? Like, I don't know if it's officially part of Rebirth or not, but the Gerard Way's new sub imprint,
Young Animal.
We've got our fancy TV up and running in the store, and there's a little 5-minute promo that he recorded talking about it, and it's also like,
I mean. All the creators are saying the things I want them to.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really good step in the right direction.
I agree.
We know it's not all going to come off.
Yeah. No, I don't think it all will.
It's sounding a lot more promising than I thought it did like a month or two ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. And the we still have a few of the new DC preview book, which is free, which has interviews as well as solicits the first month and
lots
previews
of cool
what's coming. Yeah, it's a good sampler. So if you get a chance, pick that up. Then, of course... Free RPG Day is coming up on Saturday, June 18th. And it's going to be – we got a lot of stuff coming up this summer.
How much free stuff can we give away, Randy?
Everything free. By the way, we're going out of business. We're just going to give everything away free.
No, we're not doing
that. Well, then we can actually do the thing where we just read comics all day.
Yeah, until we – and we'll have to be reading under a bridge because we won't be able to pay rent and we won't be able to eat food.
Can we make a fort out of comics?
Probably. I mean, I have enough comics. I could read comics without any money.
So the headline of the next day will be like, or next week will be like, three found dead in comic fort.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Died of exposure.
Yeah. Sure.
Finally, one last thing I want to mention is that I don't know if everybody knows, we do a weekly email newsletter, the Rose Gallery Dispatch, which usually has basically the upcoming news, just like we have here, but with all links to our website and that kind of thing, the weekly list of games, with the weekly list of comics, all that kind of thing. So if you are not on the Dispatch, it's a good way to keep up with what's going on for the store. You can just drop us an email that says, add me to the Dispatch, or you can go to MailChimp where our newsletter is set up and add it from there somehow magically.
Yeah, we don't spam you with stuff. It's just a once-a-week thing of like all the comics hitting that week, and if we're going to have any specials, or if we're going to have creators out, stuff that you want
to
know.
Yep, and I've started adding, I've now figured out how to add videos to it, so started adding a video to the beginning of each one.
Nice.
This week's video was the tabletop day.
Nice.
We'll do more of that as we go on. All right, on to news, and last week we were a little rushed for time, and we had to do a preview review, so basically we skipped some news, including all the stuff out of Seattle Expo, the Emerald City Expo. So we're going to go back and hit some news.
Let's do it.
Starting with the Emerald City Expo thing. So in addition to Emerald City Comic Con going on, the Image Expo started right before that, and they announced, as they always do at their Image Expos, a ton of stuff. And I'm not going to go through everything, but there was a lot of stuff. Jason Latour from Southern Bastards has a new book, along with art by Greg Hinkle from Airboy.
Okay.
That's called Black Cloud. That is once upon a time, they built a world where dreams come true, and those dreams went to war. In Black Cloud, we meet Zelda, exiled to Earth. Her dreams of revolution are gone, but she still holds the key to the world she left behind, and it's for sale. So it sounds like kind of crazy dystopian dream fiction kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Hickman has a new book with Tom Coker on art, which is a classic occult indoctrination.
You say classic?
Classic.
Occult? What does that mean?
Where the secret schools of magic are actually clandestine banking cartels and control all of society. A hidden world where vampire Russian oligarchs, black popes, enchanted American aristocrats, and hitmen from the International Monetary Fund work together to keep all of us in our rightful place.
That sounds like Hickman.
It does. It's and Coker's
conspiratorial social critique.
Coker is a great artist.
Yeah, he is.
But it says the Black Monday Murders is a brand new crypto noir series about dirty, filthy money and what kind of people you can buy with it. Howard Chaykin has a new book that's it looks like a modern day, a dirty bomb wipes out New York. Mm-hmm. Jim Zub, who you may know from Wayward, has a new book called Glitter Bomb that is a horror story about failed fame and blood-soaked revenge in Hollywood. This is one I'm very excited about. Brandon Thomas has a book called Horizon. That is a sort of sci-fi. It looks like a big sweeping sci-fi thing. Artist is Juan Gedeon, who I don't know. It's a new Skybound book.
Okay,
but it looks interesting. But basically, it's a
Brandon Thomas.
He's a guy who's done some. He's been around the fringe of the industry for a while.
Okay,
he's an artist who a writer I think I really like, and I've wanted him to get bigger. So basically, it's like Earth. It sounds like, remember the Astro City you liked, Dave, about the alien, like the first family were like the bad guys?
Right, right. It was the sort of superheroes from the perspective of aliens who saw them not themselves not as invaders, but as, you know, brave protectors.
Right.
I had to look up where I knew Juan Gedeon from.
Yeah.
He did the Ghost Racer stuff for Secret Wars.
Oh, yeah. So Horizon, it says, is Zia Malin thought she'd fought her very last war until she learned her planet was targeted for occupation by a desperate world called Earth.
Interesting, yeah.
So, like, that's it's the alien invasion, but we're the aliens.
Yeah. It also sounds a little bit like a little bit of that vibe of We Stand on Guard.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably Earth as metaphor for American expansionist moves.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. I don't know.
Killer by Kill is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. It's a troubled young
noir set in the world of pinball.
It is a troubled young man compelled to kill bad people, and he struggles to keep his secret as it slowly begins to ruin his life and the lives of his friends and young ones. Uh-huh. A thriller and a deconstruction of vigilantism.
Okay, that sounds interesting.
Yep, and everything those guys do.
Yep.
And then here's an interesting
one. What about the dark world of pinball? I'm just saying, Brubaker, call me.
I'll tweet him.
Yeah,
make sure that happens.
Do that.
There's a book called Moonshine. This is set during the Prohibition era in the backwoods of Appalachia. It's about a guy sent from New York City to deal with the best moonshiner in West Virginia. It seems like it's going to be sort of New York crime boss against backwoods like crime. And here's the interesting thing about this, beyond the concept, which sounds fun. Yeah. It's Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Rizzo, the guys who did 100 Bullets for Vertigo, is edited by Will Dennis, also from Vertigo.
Oh.
So it sounds like this is an expatriate Vertigo project
that
moved over to Image, which brings me to part of the news, which is that Karen Berger, formerly the head of Vertigo, is now doing editing for Image.
Her first one that she's doing is like the Surgeon X?
Yeah, Surgeon X.
Which I forget who the creative team on that
Which
was
previewed in that dollar issue that we got this week.
So
it was kind of fun.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And I need to check
Moonshine
that out.
Moonshine looks great.
I mean, honestly, anything that Azzarello and Rizzo do at this point, I feel like they're joined at the hip a little bit.
I think probably people know, but if you don't, Karen Berger is maybe the most legendary editor in the business, except for maybe Archie Goodwin.
Didn't she, edit, like, Swamp Thing?
She edited
Alan Moore.
Did she bring Sandman in?
I think so. I think she basically ushered in Vertigo.
She was Vertigo.
Yeah. And, you know, if you think about that, Vertigo itself, like, ushered in, like, trade paperbacks as a viable thing. I mean, like, you cannot overestimate her sort of brilliance.
Right.
It does lead me to think that probably Vertigo will be going away.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of signs like that. Like, the Young Animal imprint looks like something that Vertigo would have done instead. It's a new imprint. And I think DC is realizing that...
I think it's the right thing to do.
Well, Vertigo's... How long has that been around? Since the mid-90s?
It was like
90s.
Technically, I feel like those books were around, some of them in the late 80s, but the imprint did not occur.
The imprint started, I think, in 92 or 94.
That sounds right.
So that's a good 20-year run for an imprint.
I mean, Vertigo's tried to sort of resuscitate itself a little bit, but the last couple of
the current stuff is just not, it's not clicking
it's,
the same
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it's not clicking with people.
Fables was the last mega hit.
Yeah. They still do good stuff, and we still sell a ton of their backlist. Like, the backlist is never going away.
Yeah. Honestly,
I mean, every week we sell Why the Last Man.
Yeah.
Sell,
I do find
Punk Rock Jesus. We'll sell. I mean,
and Astro City is through Vertigo.
Yeah.
Astro City. Although it's a weird fit.
The young animal thing, I think, is going to be exciting and different, and we'll do a good job of replacing it, but without actually being it. It does sound like it's a little bit more young adult oriented, but definitely with its punk attitude.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think if they retire for a while, and then, you know, if at some point secretly, you know, like 5 or 10 years from now, they get some badass creators under their belt and they want to do a Vertigo Reborn or something like that, then you do it.
Yeah.
You almost do the same thing you do with superheroes when, like, Thor or Wolverine or whatever, when they get overexposed, retire them for a while.
But in superheroes, that means kill them.
Yeah, that's right.
And bring them back.
What I mean is Death from Sandman should take them.
Yes, I agree. Then, again, a few more. Motor Crush. This is Brendan Fletcher, Cameron Stewart, and Bab Starr, the Batgirl team, doing a sci-fi action series that is about a girl who competes in a worldwide motorcycle racing league, and by night cracks helmets of rival gangs in brutal illegal bike wars. This sounds badass.
And I bet Babs is having, like, the time of her life trying it.
It's going to come in December. I'm very excited about that. We love Bab Starr, and we like the new Batgirl, and this sounds just like a ton of fun. There's lots of other stuff that's coming out. They announced a ton of books. Oh, Rick Remender and Jerome Pena, who you may know as the people they did Uncanny X-Force together. They did Fear Agent together.
Yep. Pena has a really amazing painted art style.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. They have a new book coming out called Seven to Eternity, which is a sounds like a sort of magic fantasy kind of thing, sort of epic fantasy with maybe a little bit of that feudal Japan kind of thing.
Okay.
Sounds like fun. Surgeon X is edited by Karen Berger, and I bet it's John Watkiss on the art, who you might remember as the guy who did the Sandman Mystery Theater early on.
This
is another one I bet was probably an Image pitch originally.
A Vertigo pitch originally.
But this is about a vigilante doctor in a world where the antibiotic apocalypse has hit, and antibiotic resistant diseases have made healthcare even more fractious and difficult to get.
Interesting.
That was probably my favorite of those. There's a dollar book that came out last week that had 4 or 5 Image books in it, little previews.
Yeah.
And Surgeon X was probably my favorite of the bunch.
If we often get people coming in saying, "I'm looking for something off the beaten path, just anything that's not superheroes, or maybe something from Image."
That is off the beaten path.
But I would say that sampler. How much is it?
A buck.
Yep.
You've got a buck to spend. Get that sampler. If you're even vaguely interested in what Image is doing these days, get that sampler.
Yeah, Image is the new Vertigo at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and has been for a while.
Yeah.
And, the final announcement from Image Expo. Creators from Image and something called Iron Circus, which I think is a webcomics collective, announced the formation of Creators for Creators, which is a new nonprofit organization that will award a $30,000 grant for one cartoonist or writer-artist team to support the creation of a new and original work of a length between 64 and 100 pages over the course of a single year. So they get money to basically do their graphic novel.
Uh-huh.
And this was founded by some of the group includes Charlie Adlard, Jordi Belair, David Brothers, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Matt Fraction, Nick Dragota, Karen Gillan, Jonathan Hickman, Fiona Staples, Brian K. Vaughan.
Right, the stalwarts of Image.
Yeah, so these guys basically are going to provide mentorship and advice to these people who are trying to start, you know, put up something new. So the notion is to support new talent by giving them money and support.
It's pretty amazing.
And it's fantastic. It's such a natural thing to do, to sort of pay back what you've gotten in the industry.
Yeah.
And I think it's amazing.
Like, the tradition, of comics over the decades, especially when it's been more like just a straight dry business, is to always be afraid of the young up and comers who are going to take your job away.
Yep.
This is a sort of more progressive theme. It's giving back. It's trying to build on what's come before rather than be fractious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fantastic idea, and I think really nice to see that kind of thing opening up. There was previously the Zurich grant that Peter Laird, the co-creator of TMNT, had launched, and I guess that shut down relatively recently.
Right. But that was going for ages, and I know it got a lot of people their starts.
Yeah. Well, Gene Yang, current Superman writer, was a Zurich Award grant winner. Adrian Tomine was another one.
Yeah.
All right.
It is interesting to see that what can come of of a mega commercial success.
Yeah.
You know, like the Ninja Turtles, they started out kind of a little underground action comic, became the most commercialized thing in all the world, and yet the creators still, they did have a giving spirit. They did want to give back.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to Dark Horse news from Emerald City. Two kind of fun things were announced. One was a co-production with Boom Studios called Tarzan on the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, right.
Now, this is going to be co-written by Tim Seeley and David Walker.
I mean, that's an awesome combo.
Art by Fernando Dagnino, who I know sort of, but it, basically what you need to know is the art is beautiful.
Okay.
And it's going to be Tarzan is raised by Zira and Cornelius alongside their biological son Milo, and that's where the story begins.
That's awesome.
That sounds super fun.
Ridiculous, but awesome.
Yeah. So that sounds like fun. And then the other big crossover they're doing by our old friend John Layman is Predator versus Aliens versus Judge Dredd.
And I've seen Judge Dredd take on the aliens before.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't think I've seen Predator.
No, but it's going to be fun.
Yep. I like it. I actually, you know, I have a particular fondness for the Predator versus Alien crossover.
Predator or Alien Judge Dredd.
Alien Judge Dredd.
I have that crossover.
It's a really good one.
It's ridiculous, but awesome too.
It was written by Andy Diggle.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
It had really good co-written it too.
It did. And it was co-written, I think, by John Winder. The guy who drew it was
like one of those guys, like Esquerra.
Carlos Esquerra. It was. Esquerra. You're right.
He was like one of the longtime Judge Dredd guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, I remember it looked really beautiful. He reminded me of Guy Davis's art.
Esquire didn't create Judge Dredd, did he?
I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he's the visual.
Yeah,
that's like
getting Steve Ditko to do Spider-Man versus yeah, Batman. It's exactly. Crazy. Okay, but that sounds like a ton of fun.
It does.
And we'll be talking about all that stuff as it gets a little closer. But just kind of a fun thing. One last bit of comics news, and not as good. This broke just earlier this week. The beloved Rat Queens is going on hiatus.
Yeah, I saw that right after the latest trade hit.
Writer Curtis Wiebe said, basically he's been thinking about it. He's like been struggling with it, but he decided after a lot of thinking and soul searching to put Rat Queens on hiatus. Now,
do we know if there's a specific reason?
No. We can make guesses. I can speculate that maybe all the artistic turmoil that it's had.
Right.
And then possibly, if the current artist was behind, because I know there was some, it was running behind this last story arc, if it just became too much of a hassle.
Yes. For those who don't know, he was unlucky enough to have collaborated with a person who was a talented artist, but
very
also
good
turned
artist.
Out to be a domestic abuser.
Yes.
It does seem like what I saw of the fallout of that was that, people were good at getting treatment for it and stuff like that, but he got fired, basically, of course, and they've been moved on to other people. And unfortunately, the other people, while also talented...
Stefan Shejic was one. He came in. He was great.
But he was only around exclusive. For a little bit.
But yeah, he signed exclusive at top.
He had health issues.
Yeah. And he has numerous other books that he's doing. He does successful books. Sunstone, he's doing Switch. He's got enough on his plate.
I get that, but why do you sign on to a book if you're busy?
I know. I think it was probably a good profile raiser for him.
I feel like... who's the writer on Rat Queens?
Curtis Wiebe.
I feel like this poor guy is writing this really good comic and has just been unlucky as hell.
Well, the other thing is he did this previously with his other book, Peter Panzerfaust, which was Peter Pan in World War I.
Yeah,
it was also very beloved, and he put that on hiatus without finishing it. And I'm saying he's got to finish his next book because that's not a pattern you want to get into.
He already has.
I was going to talk about that.
June,
But Rat Queens is a great book. The third trade is complete. They did not put out the first part of the next story at least, so it's there's no left hanging story. It's just I would have liked to have seen more.
Right.
He does say on hiatus, but generally in comics, on hiatus, especially if your creator is working and keep doing more stuff, means never again.
Right. But we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, but there's three volumes of it, and it's a really great book.
It's still one of the most remarkable fantasy series in the last decade.
But his next book that he's doing is called Bounty. It's for Dark Horse. It has art by Mindy Lee, and it's basically sort of...
I mean, she's going to get typhoid fever or something.
It's sort of Rat Queens meets Firefly, essentially. So hopefully that'll be good. I'm a little bummed. Dark Horse is not always as high profile as Image, even if it's the same exact book you would have done at Image. I feel like it could slip under the radar. So hopefully Rat Queens fans will give that one a shot, and hopefully it'll be good, because I really want him to have another great book, and I'm really bummed about this Rat Queens. It's been a while since something unexpectedly got canceled out from under me.
Yeah.
We live in sort of a market where even the books that I love and that get canceled, for example, Hercules that we all really like but is not selling – We can see it coming, and we get a good final, you know, we get one story out of it and it gets completed. A unexpected, this book that was solicited for two more issues and you thought was doing great is gone. Doesn't happen that much in this market. Yeah. It's sort of a bummer.
And it's been a buzz book. Yeah. You know, everybody I know who's read it generally is pretty excited for it.
Yeah.
So,
kind of a bummer. All right. Moving on to trailers, and there were three that I wanted to talk about. In increasing order of things people have seen, let's start off with The Henchman, the Al Leong story.
Oh, yes. For a minute, I was like, what's that? But yeah, I posted this.
Yes. This is a...
it's like a documentary.
It's a documentary.
On, like, the most well-known henchman in movie history.
Yeah, he's the guy with the... He's the Asian guy with, like, the mustache and the
usually
weird...
long hair.
Yeah, weird long hair.
Seen Big Trouble in Little China.
Die Hard.
Okay. So in Big Trouble in Little China, he's the guy with the cleavers.
Yep.
In Die Hard, he's the guy who eats the candy bar.
Yep.
In Lethal Weapon, he's the guy who tortures Riggs.
Yep.
He is also Genghis Khan in Bill and Ted's Great Adventure. What's their
excellent
first
adventure.
Excellent Adventure? Yeah.
If you watch the trailer for this movie, you'll see clips of all of these things.
Yep.
And the dude is like this amazing martial artist.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason is he's got this kind of physicality and presence.
Yeah.
And finally, he's getting his own movie dedicated to his skill as the ultimate henchman.
I don't watch a lot of documentaries, but I'm going to watch this one.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I realized, like, this guy's been like a part of my childhood.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It was, like, I grew up watching every single one of my heroes probably kill him.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the Guardians trailer. Did you guys watch this one?
Guardians. No. What? Who?
The Russian superheroes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know
that. I saw, like, I've seen a few different trailers. Was this the one that's...
This was the latest one.
I don't know if I saw the latest.
It's it ends with the werebear crashing out of a cabin.
Yeah, I know. I have not seen that one. I saw the one with the girl and the guy, sickle guy.
It reminds me, Dave nailed it. It's the Soviet super soldiers.
It kind of is. If y'all haven't seen this, the basic thing is that this is like, it looks like a high budget Russian superhero film.
Yeah.
Dark. I'm guessing. Yeah. It's pretty edgy and kind
of
dark.
Well, it's sort of a their country is falling apart. They were military and now they're independent. Mm-hmm. They're trying to keep their country together. There's a little bit of conspiracy aspect to it, but it's also larger than life Avengers style superhero.
Oh yeah, there's some amazing visuals and stuff. A lot of visual grandeur. It looks like this is sort of that poetic violence.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Russian series Nightwatch that we liked, remember?
Yeah, I would say that's a good comparison.
Every so often something weird and sort of supernatural comes out of the Russian cinema, and I'm kind of looking forward to this. Yeah. I mean, I don't expect any greatness. I'm sure that it's going to be a little cheesy.
Yeah.
But it looks interesting.
I saw the trailer making the rounds on Facebook. Every single person I saw who saw it said that looks cool.
Yeah.
So, what's it called again?
Guardians.
Guardians. Okay.
And I don't know how easy it's going to be to get a hold of. I guess we'll see.
Well, if it reaches a sort of day watch and night watch,
I bet it's going to get a release.
Yeah, it'll get a release.
And then finally, there's the big trailer everybody's probably seen, which is Doctor Strange.
I like how you timed it just so that you were yawning.
Doctor Strange got its first trailer.
Yeah, it's technically, I guess, like the teaser trailer.
It's a teaser, yeah.
It's light on, like, showing the superhero stuff, but very, very strong, I thought, as far as delivering... to people, basic concept of the character, which is very different from all the other Marvel heroes.
Yep.
And building to a really cool finale of just showing you, like, what he's about.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this kind of redemption story and the story of a guy who's like a science guy who gets broken down through various things and has to embrace magic.
Yeah.
Or science that looks a lot like magic.
Right the first time.
What we know that they're going to present it as.
Dave, so not going to happen.
I think one of the biggest things is this is her first glimpse of Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One.
And she's great.
Yeah.
She looks great.
She's there in the scene that's maybe the most memorable scene in the trailer.
Where she punches his astral form out of him so hard,
his astral form comes out. Yep. And it's cool because he's looking at it like he a ghost knocked out of the body. And he's looking like, what am I?
There's a lot of cool Inception Matrix style visuals to it.
And his final kind of like teach me thing is very much like that falls right into the martial arts tradition.
This is also, I mean, Cumberbatch doing no British accent.
That's so weird.
It's a little weird, but it sounds me a little good.
Bit. It sounds good, yeah. I'm a little worried because every time an actor who's British does an American accent, or a lot of the time, they spend so much time on the accent that their acting suffers a little bit.
And we talked about this. Well, it throws me a little bit, both like UK and also like Aussie actors and stuff like that, New Zealanders.
But there's some really good ones.
I've heard some really good ones, but I've now that I've my ear has started picking up the affectation.
I can't pick like Russell Crowe up when he does his sort of American
Crowe
style.
Is good, although now that I think knowing it, like there's a what's the Insider.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies with him in it. But there is a certain like slight overpronunciation of words that kind of comes out. It's like
when you're listening to the Black Tapes and you realize how Canadian they are.
Yes. But that said, I think he's going to do a pretty good job.
Yeah. No, it looks...
They said they were Canadian after clearly a lot of people called him out.
Yeah, it looks really great. I'm excited. The complaints I've heard is people saying, oh, they're doing another origin movie. And of course you do an origin movie for a character. Nobody knows this character.
Not Spider-Man.
No.
I mean, it's been years since he's had his ongoing. He finally does, but yeah, not a lot of people know his origin.
I was saying this the other day. I know the gist of it. I know that he's like an egotistical surgeon. He gets in a wreck or something like that. He becomes aimless, and he somehow, I forget quite how, ends up like climbing the Himalayas and talking to the Ancient One or whatever. But I don't remember like why.
Dave, that's just what you do. If you get in a car accident, it ruins your hand, you go to the Himalayas and you climb to find the Ancient One.
I need to do this.
Yeah, did you not know? That is what they tell you. If you go to the hospital, they're like, well, listen, we have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is your hands are crushed. The good news is here's a map to Tibet.
First of all, I think this movie is probably not going to... It's going to be its own spin on it.
Yeah,
Like everything else.
Yep.
And second, like, I don't know all the specifics. They're going to refine its thematics.
Yep.
So that there's a nice through line of story. And they've been doing this with all their movies.
Yeah.
They did it with Captain America. They did a great job.
Look at Ant-Man.
Yeah.
They took everything that was great about the character and boiled it down to a new story that fits the character.
And honestly, this is just a teaser. We have no idea what this movie is about. We know some of the villains involved, but we don't.
We haven't seen everybody, clearly.
One of the things I liked about it is that just the brief glimpses of magic in it make it look like it's crazy, mind-bending, Matrix, Inception, crazy-ass stuff.
You mean quantum field manipulation? Is that what you think it is?
I'd probably call it that, Nanotech. if Warren Ellis was right.
The only gripe I have is that I was really wishing for a Hoary Host of Hoggoth or something in there, but it's just the teaser.
He'll say it.
I know they will, but people would have gone nuts for that.
Yeah.
I mean, people.
I can't wait to see like the
You know in Galaxy Quest, the big dramatic finale for what's his name, Alan Rickman's character, when he actually says by Grabthar's hammer, but he says it with the full dramatic weight.
Yeah.
If he says like by the eye of Agamotto or something like that with that kind of thing, you'd be like, oh my god.
Yep. I am super excited for this movie. Marvel hasn't let me down yet, honestly.
It's October, right?
It's November, I think.
Oh, is it November?
I think it's November. It's later in the year, but it's pre Christmas. That's exciting. Okay, moving on to, let's talk some other movie news.
Yep.
Again, Marvel stuff. Stick with the Marvel for now, I guess. So, Natalie Portman is not going to be in Thor Ragnarok. Apparently she's sort of done with the whole thing.
It's too bad because she is essentially Thor's main love interest.
Yeah, well, and Jane Foster I guess that means they're probably not going to do female Thor. or they'll have to recast. But... this is the thing they were always going to deal with in Marvel Cinematic.
And honestly, she's a character. I mean, they cast Bruce Banner and recast Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Jane Foster, you could.
And I think that they should keep that in mind because I think that it's better to recast. Kevin Feige at one point said that they wouldn't recast Iron Man.
Yeah.
I think that's crazy talk. I think you need to be able to recast if you want to keep your universe going long term.
Yep. You know what would be interesting, and I think kind of way to do it is... not always to make a point of it, but with Iron Man, you could actually have, you know, he gets shot down by one of his foes, he gets badly hurt, just like in Mass Effect.
Yeah.
It does some reconstructive surgery with all his high tech stuff,
right.
Nanites and whatever, and he comes out a little bit different.
Younger, somehow. but anyway, the interesting thing about this is that Tessa Thompson is in as the female lead of Thor Ragnarok. Now, I don't know this actress off the top of my head. Nick, Tessa Thompson, you know her?
It doesn't ring a bell.
She's in Creed.
She's in Creed, that's right.
Which I haven't watched yet.
She is the girlfriend in Creed who I thought was exceptional in it, actually. She took it beyond what was could have been a traditional girlfriend role and felt like a much stronger character and not just a prop. You know, yeah. that it's so easy to do in kind of a movie that is not about relationships.
Right.
And I thought she was really, she emerged as a very strong character. So I think the actress for sure has the chops.
And we don't know who she's playing.
Wonder if she could play, who was the character from Jason Aaron's run, the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent? Or?
Oh, the speculation is Valkyrie.
Yeah, because I've heard that somewhere.
We know that we know for sure that Ragnarok is going to take place in Asgard for the most part.
I mean, she's young and very fit, so I'm sure that that's at least conceivable.
How about play the Enchantress?
That'd be cool
too. I almost feel like the Enchantress needs to be like more like a 30 something. I always felt like she's a little older.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying, I want Enchantress and Executioner.
I also want this. okay. Other movie news, we have a title for Spider-Man.
Right.
It is Spider-Man Homecoming, which is kind of a nice wink and nod.
It is.
I heard some people griping about it kind of in that way of like, it's not badass or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of, the internet will just kind of pick anything apart if it's not immediately the perfect thing that they wanted in their head.
Well, the assumption also is that it's probably going to be high school. It's probably going to deal with this homecoming dance, but who knows? Everybody's.
Why couldn't it be Spider-Man Venom's Revenge?
I'm curious about it. Everybody's really nervous about Spider-Man, like they're going to do more of the origin, or you know, we're going to. Why is this a third reboot? All this kind of thing. But
I think some nervousness is warranted.
Some nervousness is warranted. I certainly was, but just that bit of him in the Civil War trailer.
Yeah,
I'm like, okay, I'm on board. I'm excited now.
It's already kind of an interesting rethink, and by associating it with Marvel, I think it suggests a level of quality that we have not seen for a little while.
Well, and the other bit of rumor is that Michael Keaton is in talks to be the villain, possibly the Vulture.
Oh, interesting. I would love to see a good version of the Vulture.
Me too.
Because sometimes Spider-Man has some of the weirdest villains. It's one of those ones where it's kind of easy to think of it almost feels like you should be rooting for them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's this old man who just flies.
Yeah.
I'm like, of course Spider-Man's going to kick his ass. But, you know, they generally make the Vulture this mean SOB in the comics.
They've made him very ruthless.
In the comics, he's dangerous,
And I feel like Keaton could pull that off. That's interesting. I hadn't thought that that's of who he would be playing.
Yeah.
I would really love it if they decided to do some of the... less appreciated Spider-Man villains.
You know what else would be fun?
You always go to Green Goblin, and that's...
I also want to see some supporting characters like the Black Fox.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Or the Black Cat, for that matter.
Or Black Cat. But yeah. All right, and then moving on to other movie news, movie news, DC has greenlit a Batman movie written and directed by Ben Affleck,
yeah,
I believe?
Yeah, that's what the rumor is.
Which is kind of funny, despite Batman vs. Superman sort of ultimately disappointing returns, disappointing reviews... Everybody said how much they like Ben Affleck as Batman. You guys both like Ben Affleck as Batman,
I think,
right?
Yeah, he was good.
He was hyper intense during it.
Are you excited about the next Ben Affleck Batman movie?
I'd say you'd almost describe it as comically intense.
Okay.
And then just in the sense that, like, I felt like at any given moment he was going to snap and punch me through the screen.
I feel like that was on purpose.
It was on purpose. He was supposed to be a Batman on the edge. And so he did a really good job. I'm not excited because at this point, barring maybe Suicide Squad, any of the Marvel or the DC stuff will be sort of tainted by this tone they've chosen.
Yeah.
And if it fits Batman better, I think he'll do a good job with it. And he may even, is he going to like write it?
I'm sure
he is writing and directing. Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if like the guy who did, what was the Oscar movie that wrote
Argo?
Even on Justice.
Argo.
Yeah. Like his writing partner there.
Yeah.
Comes in.
The weird thing is like, even though like we know he's an accomplished director, I don't know that his vision of Batman, you know, he may have really glommed on to the darker side of stuff and, you know, may be well done, but it may be just kind of more of the same in that sense. That's my greatest fear.
Well, the thing is, like, I love The Town.
Yeah.
And I loved Argo. Neither one of those is Batman-like in any way.
Right. But I have a feeling that he could surprise us, too.
I have a feeling this, and this is me being cynical again, this is yet more of the DC people reaching out to the next savior that is going to make the DC movies good.
Well here's the thing. A Batman movie is tried and true money.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I mean, it is a
no-brainer. It'll make money.
Yeah.
And I think people will flock to it. And
the most successful ones having been the Nolan ones, continues that tradition, it's not going to alienate a lot of people.
No. I just don't think it's going to be for me, once again. Despite really liking Affleck as a director. And I'm sure I'd like him as Batman. I just, I don't know. I'm still skeptical of anything. Until DC makes a movie I like, I've got to be skeptical.
If it was 10 years ago, I could, you know, I think I could see why they would see him as the savior. In an era when so many kind of like general audience, crowd pleaser kind of superhero movies have come out of Marvel, yeah. And also, and then where to the point they've even developed, you know, their edgier side of stuff like Cap, Winter Soldier,
yeah.
and the current upcoming Civil War and stuff. It seems, I can only assume it's a desire on DC's part or Warner Brothers' part to not emulate Marvel in any way, to show no
yeah.
attempt to follow.
Yeah.
Because, and which seems like pathological to me,
yes.
In its insistence on,
I agree.
On breaking from it.
I agree.
You know how the rumor was like no humor in DC things a
yeah.
few years ago?
Yeah.
I swear that was like the case in Superman versus Batman.
Yeah.
There was like maybe one or two dry chuckles in the whole 2.5 hours.
Yeah. This is a weird thing to say because I think it's been like 15 years since he made a movie I liked, but I'd be more excited if Kevin Smith was writing and directing a Batman movie.
Oh, no, Randy.
Because I feel like that guy gets Batman. Look at his Fat Man on Batman podcast. He gets it.
Yeah, but look at his comics, peeing Batman.
Yeah, that's true. And look at most of his movies in the last few years.
Yeah. I like the guy. I like the man himself pretty well, but I feel like, and I even like his writing sometimes,
yep.
but I feel like the only guy he should be allowed to write is Green Arrow.
Yep. But that's less of a sponsorship.
An endorsement of him and more of an indictment.
Yeah, less an endorsement of Kevin Smith and more an indictment of what they're doing with their movies. All right. A couple quick hits of game news, and then we'll move on to our comics for the week. New Battlefront DLC has been announced.
Yes, yeah.
Now, you guys still haven't played Outer Rim, right?
No, we're bad.
Okay, so this is more theoretical excitement for you.
Well, I would have been really happy in the fact that my cat chewed through my charger for my controllers.
Oh.
So both of my controllers are sitting dead at the moment.
You know, you can buy a charger for like $20, right? You know this.
Yeah, no, I know. I go out and buy it. I just haven't had a chance.
Anyway, the next batch of DLC coming in, I believe June or maybe July.
It's June.
Is Cloud City. So new maps in there. And the new characters are the bounty hunter Dengar.
Which is awesome.
And Lando.
Dengar going to have his day. And Lando, yeah, that's amazing.
So that'll be fun. And
say, where's Lobot?
He'll be out there running around like as a bot.
So.
He'll be a bot.
Yeah, well, the Outer Rim DLC was great, so I'm very excited about the Cloud City DLC.
As you know, the one thing that I require of Lando is that when you appear as him, he does the "Hello, what have we here?"
I want him to look and be like, "You truly belong among the clouds,"
as he's killing people and stuff.
Yeah. He'll probably have his own taunts.
Yeah.
All right. And the last bit of news is a board game news, which has been getting quite a bit of buzz online, which is a Labyrinth board game.
Yeah, yeah. I forget who's putting it out.
I don't remember either.
But it's like, it looks really elaborate. It's like really visually lush. I know it's like there are up to four players, and each one of them is like one of the characters from the game. So there's like, was it Sarah mm-hmm. and Hoggle, I guess,
yeah.
and so the little dog?
David Bowie.
David Bowie is one of them.
Is he? I thought he was one that was just like
the
bad guy.
You would think he would be the bad guy in it.
Yeah, true.
But there's at least four heroes, and I can think of three of them. It's the girl, the little dog dude, and Hoggle, and
I can't help you. I've
grumpy,
never seen the movie all the way through.
Sleepy.
I've seen it, but it's been a couple of decades. I don't know.
Well, like I said, I was more of a Neverending Story kid or Crawl kid, if you will.
Sure.
It always
Dark Crystal instead of Labyrinth.
I didn't like Dark Crystal either.
Oh,
that was boring. But Dark Crystal was a little too girly for me.
Yeah,
a little too singy.
Yeah.
I was like right at the age where I wanted kind of like the was a little bit more edge to my fantasy. So
you wanted Liam Neeson as a Cyclops.
I wanted Liam Neeson as a Cyclops or Willow, which
Willow, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I needed Mad Mardigan.
Dude, Willow's awesome. I can't.
But anyway, but I do still have some fondness for Labyrinth. David Bowie is obviously awesome, and will be now immortalized. His package will be immortalized in miniature. and I've seen several people very excited for this game. It seems cool.
Yep, and we will definitely be carrying it. All right, that is about it for news this week, and we will be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. All right, we are talking comics for Wednesday, April 20th, And let's just jump right in. Dave, what do you got for us this week?
What? I'm not ready. All right, I'm ready.
Would you say I've tossed you into the deep end?
Oh, it's a tie-in thematically. You son of a bitch. Okay, so new from Dark Horse is a book called Department H. This is the first issue of it.
Hey, wait a minute. That makes another word.
Yes, if you read it back to back, it says depth because it's at the ocean depth.
Yes.
It's actually very cool looking. Randy made it sound all cheesy, but it's cool.
No, it is cool, actually.
This is Matt Kent's new book. Matt Kent is not a writer or artist. He's writer-artist, right, Randy?
Yeah.
He's not somebody who I've ever read anything from. So this was my first approach to him. What was the big thing?
Mind Management was the thing he did previous to this, yeah. And this seems to be in the sort of the same vein, and that it's him doing a big world building thing.
Yeah, and it reminds me a lot. You know, he superficially resembles somewhat Jeff Lemire's visual style.
Yeah,
but also I would say something of his writing style, which I thought was interesting. This is a sort of futuristic, near future suspense thriller sort of amounts to a murder mystery at the bottom of the ocean in a kind of if you've seen the movie The Abyss. Or I guess read the book Sphere or something like that.
Yeah. You know,
that kind of like really, really deep sea, kind of creepily weird ocean depth stuff.
Or if you liked, was it The Wake that Scott Snyder did for Vertigo?
Yeah. There's a whole world of eerie undersea adventure.
Yes. This or if you liked Finding Nemo, maybe?
No,
a little further, a little bit.
So what we've got is the daughter, I forget what her, if she is a scientist herself, but she's the daughter of a scientist who's a, I think was like, is he on like the cusp of something? The world has clearly kind of gone to seed.
Yeah.
I feel like, I forget if it's environmental disaster.
I think it is.
And there's, her father was a guy who may have been like working towards big solutions, things like that, you know, maybe he was going to start to, you know, Soylent Green in the movie.
It's a big solution.
Was supposed to be actually what people were told it was undersea plankton farms.
Yes.
And stuff like that. So I don't know if he was like working on something that was like more like that ideal or what, but he's been murdered. And so as the story begins, she is going down in a sub and we get a series of sort of flashbacks that introduce us to her father, or, you know, you get glimpses of him, or you hear about him, her dad's best friend. Every single person in this is a suspect.
Okay.
It is definitely it's a murder mystery, but it's also character-oriented. So, in the same way that, you know, the Abyss was kind of this sci-fi suspense story, but it was also, you know, you got to know all the roughnecks and stuff down there.
Yeah.
There is something of that to this. They're a little bit more on the science side of things, some of them are kind of a little bit more like on that roughneck blue collar side of things, and I'd say it feels as much of a kind of sci-fi exploration thing at this point. Like even when she goes to like look at the crime scene, she has to like suit up in this like really high tech dive suit.
Yeah.
It's near futuristic, looks really cool. I like his watercolor style art on this.
Yeah.
But to even view the crime scene, she has to gear up and check it out. I thought it was interesting.
Is there a little bit, Dave, of that whiteout thing where it's like a murder in an isolated location kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. I would say for sure the exotic locale with all its, you know, she's feeling both the pressure, of course, of the extreme importance of the case, the fact that it's personal to her, and the literal ocean pressure caving in on her. But I found all the characters interesting to look at. At first I was like, oh, this guy's her dad's longtime friend, who's been financing him. Definitely the killer. but then, it's one of those, like any good mystery, everybody seems to be aware of their status as a suspect.
Right.
The book seems to be aware that these are the obvious ones. I am sure that there will be twists to come, and I'm on board for it. I'm definitely going to check it out. I like this kind of – I like oceanic adventure.
Nick, what about you?
I have another number one to talk about, this one from Boom. It is Joyride number one. It's a miniseries, a four-issue miniseries, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, which are relatively new to me. I don't know.
Yeah, possibly new to comics. We don't know them.
But the biggest draw that made me want to read this book is the art, which is done by Marcus Toe.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
It is very beautiful. But the story is pretty simple in the sense that Earth has become kind of a police state. Mm-hmm. It's all sort of unified under one government, and they've sort of taken away the joy of the of everything. And
like
about
Alex Jones' nightmare,
and about two kids who sort of want to escape it. And I don't know. It's very good. I think the writers do a good job of.
Oh wow, that art's beautiful.
Telling who these characters are, sort of who they are under this police state, and why they want to escape, why they want to see the stars, because they basically want to just get away and start searching planets, dealing with aliens. They just
new
want
life
to
awaits
be...
you in the off-world colonies.
Yeah, they want to be free. And by the end of it, I mean, it's very much just that is the first issue, and sort of a gathering of a crew and things like that. And it's simple, it's interesting, and the art is just beautiful. Marcus Stowe does a great job of kind of creating this world and the tech, and it all sort of just is seamless and has a sense of fun to it. And it's just beautiful, honestly. And the aliens that he creates are a lot of fun, too. So overall, I just think it was a really good issue.
How realistic are the aliens? Are they like Star Trek aliens, or are they like weird protoplasmic blobs?
Well, they're Star Trek aliens. I mean, there's this one that's sort of like a caterpillar type looking creature.
Yeah, I see.
But it's got kind of
one of those standards that I actually sort of like. You know, Mass Effect, Star Trek, Babylon 5. They all kind of trafficked in humanoid-ish aliens.
Yeah, and I can already see sort of like a theme running because not everybody on the crew is actually with their sort of mentality. One is like still thinking that what Earth has become is the right thing to do, and sort of... So there's some interesting ways that this can go. So I'm on board. It's a very fun start.
Good debut.
Randy, what do you got?
All right, so I just realized we didn't have a Marvel pick this week.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's true.
Because my pick is from Image. It used to be Marvel.
Well, I guess Marvel can suck it.
And mine is Deadly Hands of Criminal, which is the magazine version of the Criminal 10th Anniversary special that they did.
And paying homage to the Deadly Hands of, like, Kung Fu. Or,
yeah.
Or, is it the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu?
Yep. Well, it features Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf.
Yeah.
So basically what this is, you can buy it in the $5.99 magazine format or the $4.99 comic book format. The magazine also has some little frontispiece and a little backup by the hip young editor of whatever comics company put out Deadly Hands of Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf in this story within a story. But basically what this is a standalone story of the criminal world that Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker created. It takes place in 1979, and it is about a young Teague Lawless, who will grow up to be kind of, or Tracy Lawless, who will grow up to be kind of a badass. He's the star of Volume 2 of Criminal.
Yeah, I was gonna say, he was the second one.
This is about him when his old man, sort of a gruff criminal, was driving him around to do something for his crime boss, and he's a like 12-year-old kid who's like driving for his dad and scouting things for him, and it's basically about life on the run for the kid of a criminal. And in between this, he has gotten this one comic that his dad gave him for his birthday that is the Fang the Kung Fu Werewolf that is a dead-on riff on sort of 70s Spider-Man comics. It's a guy who transforms into a werewolf and lives with his roommate and the girl, his roommate's girlfriend who he's secretly in love with. And it's got secret identities and kung fu and supervillains and magic and all that kind of stuff. And basically, the little story within a story there is that the kid is looking for another issue of this rare werewolf comic in the small town that they wind up in while his dad is doing his own sort of criminal business. And it's about sort of being a kid and meeting another kid and living life on the run. It's really, really great.
I've seen several times Brubaker write stories about kids growing up under dodgy moral circumstances,
yeah,
whether it's of their own making or whether they're like parents or guardians or whatever are kind of screwed up criminal types or whatever.
Yeah.
He's really good at it.
Yeah.
I know probably because he lived there.
He got his own history, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, you don't have to have read the previous Criminal stuff. You can definitely read this as a standalone issue. If you have read the previous Criminal stuff, it ties in very nicely. I miss this book. Whatever, I love everything Brubaker and Phillips do. Criminal is probably my favorite thing. So to get a little one-shot of it is great. I will hope that one day they'll go back and do some actual full-fledged stories. But This is a great standalone story. If you're a crime fan at all, if you like Brubaker and Phillips at all, or if you've ever been curious about it.
Probably if you like 70s comics, too.
And if you like 70s comics.
Because it's a specific homage to that magazine format that Marvel did, which was their kind of edgier black and white.
Right.
So this is the 10th anniversary, right?
Yes.
That's so crazy. I have to throw out a little bit of trivia. Not anybody else will know this, but I know you guys. When we started podcasting for Comic Pants, we did the first issue was one of our first podcasts.
And Ed Brubaker had sent me a preview copy. Then we talked about it.
I can't believe that was 10 years ago.
It was 10 years ago.
That's a weird sign.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, no, you're right. That was 10 years ago.
That was before I got my bionic arm. Before Nick grew gills.
That's right. That was, yeah.
We've all changed.
I love my gills.
It's before the time, before I was killed by Dr. Mortis and came back to seek vengeance from beyond the grave.
Yep. And you used to wear a 10-gallon hat.
Yeah, I did. But not in, once I came back, it didn't fit with my gritty reboot.
That's true.
Yeah.
That took a weird tangent.
All right. I'm gonna swoop in and rescue Marvel here with my cheater pick.
Oh.
Because my cheater pick is...
Knew you'd come crawling back, Randy.
Also very much a riff on 70s comics, in that it is Power Man and Iron Fist number 3.
I forgot, that's the classic Power Man and Iron Fist logo, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I've been really enjoying this book. And issue 3, where they sort of... They bring in Jessica Jones for a cameo... And the villains are sort of embarking on their plot, while Danny and Luke go seeking help from Doctor Strange. Really fun, really interesting. They introduce a character in here who I won't give away, but the new character they introduce here is such a perfect supporting character for Power Man Iron Fist. I want more of him. It's really fun. This book can occasionally lean a little jokey for me. And I was a little worried with the second issue that it was going to be a little too jokey.
Yeah.
But this gets back to that balance of sort of jokes and action and sort of the relationship between the two lead characters that is what the heart of it all is. It's also got stunning artwork by Sanford Green.
Yeah. Well, I know that the first issue reprint comes out tomorrow.
Yep.
So as of this podcast, when you hear it, it should be available. I missed it when it came out because it sold out so quickly.
Yep.
So I am looking forward to catching up on this book.
Yeah, I was going to say, issue 1, the second printing of issue 1 comes out this week. So we will have issues 1, 2, and 3 tomorrow. So if you haven't checked this out, definitely check it out. It is definitely in the running for my favorite new series of the year. Dave, what is your, Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Superman American Alien number 6.
Yep.
This was a series I did not expect to like as much as I've been liking. Written by Max Landis, who every time I ever see him on like a video or something like that, I want to punch him.
He's very punchable.
He's kind of like he's this skinny manic guy. He does have some interesting ideas sometimes. I won't deny that. But the interesting thing about this book, so these are generally stories of Superman from before he became Superman.
Yep.
Although this issue, he has been Superman for like a year or so. He's new at it. And he's visited by his friends Pete Ross and somebody else I don't know named Kenny, but I'm guessing is somebody who was introduced in here, clearly in on the secret, though. Somebody else from Smallville.
Right. Maybe is he Kenny secretly Brainiac Johnson?
Yes. What?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's interesting. Every issue has some things that I don't like in it, some things where I'm like, that doesn't quite seem like Superman, and some things that I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I really like how he frames that. And I think these would be good things to pull into a Superman comic. It reminds me of when Warren Ellis did an interesting sparring and banter between Superman and Lois Lane when he wrote that Justice League thing.
Yeah.
Was it New Maps of Hell way
yeah.
back when?
Yep.
There's some of that. So in this one, for instance, basically this is almost like, imagine like your roommate's coming to visit you and you're Superman.
Right.
That's basically what's going on here. Now, what I liked is he jokes around with these guys. He's not like the kind of uptight Clark Kent or just kind of real straightforward guy that we sometimes know. Apparently in some previous issues, he was like maybe just trying out like the superhero idea. And he had a cape and some goggles or something like that. And he's joking with them about how he only used the goggles to keep bugs out of his eyes or something like that.
Yep.
And then Pete's like, oh, I see how it is. Big city boy now. Too good to get some bugs in your eyes. And Clark is like, I'm such a sellout. And, you know, he's joking around with him like you do with your buddies.
Yep.
And it's a human side of him that I really like. I mean, at the same time, he's still very much Clark Kent. And what happens in all of these stories, all the stuff, Max Landis stuff, is there's standalone stories, so they're real kind of thematically concise. There's usually kind of some emotional punch to them. And in this one, his friends are have some questions about kind of how he's what's going to become of Superman. They even like say like they're like, well, you know, this seems like this is becoming a big thing, like, and you know, and there's villains that are showing up, and it's like, you know, and Clark at the time he's like, well, I'm not going to be Superman forever. It hasn't like occurred to him yet,
right,
which
but
is
that's
an interesting
what he is.
Notion.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, I don't know if that's the case, and then an interesting conversation comes out of it. They talk about like the S-Shield and sort of what it means to him.
Means hope.
It is not, that is not what this conversation is about in this. You know, they're like, is it ego? You know, what led you to do, what led you to wear that so prominently? And there's an interesting story behind it. They joke a little bit about Batman, too.
He's like, S is my favorite letter, and,
Anyway, by issue's end, there were a few of those scenes where I'm like, ah, I didn't like that part. I wish he hadn't done that. But at this point, I think I may pick up the trade.
Really?
As a Superman fan, there's enough that he has done that is interesting and kind of keeps Clark who he is, but kind of brings him a little bit, like, a few issues back, he had that thing where he had a like, one-night stand with the chick who's, oh, what is it, the cheetah?
Yeah.
I think it was before she became
Dr. Minerva.
Yeah. She was, like, a kind of cute archaeologist who was on a Bruce Wayne party yacht or whatever. But they end up, the story isn't so much that they slept together, although I thought it was interesting to progress Clark a little bit from being the kind of completely naive.
The square-jawed guy who never saw a woman naked before Lois.
Correct. But what's interesting is the conversation they have afterwards about, like, you know, they're, like, sitting out a little bit drunk on, like, the deck of the yacht. And they talk most of the rest of the issue about what they want to do with their lives, and it's really interesting.
Dave, you mentioned the artist is pretty good, right?
Yeah, somebody I don't know. His name is Jonathan Case.
But it is really nice art, yeah. Just looking at it from over here.
I would somewhat liken him to Chris Samnee, but also to – he's a guy who zeroes in on facial expressions particularly well. So for all of these issues are chatty, to be honest. You know, if you're looking for – Superman in action, that's not what the series is about. It is about refining Clark as a character. But he's a really good choice for that because his characters definitely, they breathe quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't been catching it, any random issue is pretty readable. Expect to maybe find one or two things that might make you go, I don't know. But the rest of it's good.
Well, you've piqued my interest in this. I was interested when it was announced, and then I was not crazy about the first issue, but mm-hmm. you've been liking it off and on. I need to check this out.
I wasn't wild about the first issue either.
Yeah.
I think I sort of warmed to it.
Okay.
Nick what you got on your plate?
Well, let's talk a little about a book that actually is about to see its conclusion in Chew.
Yeah.
And over the course of the time, they've had a couple of one-shot specials focusing on Secret Agent Poyo.
Yes. The deadliest rooster alive.
Of course. Tomorrow sees the release of the final one. This is Demon Chicken Poyo.
Yep.
Because, spoilers, Poyo now runs hell.
Yeah.
You know.
The series started out a little offbeat.
And just went crazy.
A few psychic powers here and there.
Yep.
But a little bit of FDA apocalypse.
Yep.
And then suddenly chickens are ruling hell.
Yes.
Yep.
But if I told you that this issue blended How the Grinch Stole Christmas, The Princess Bride, and The Exorcist, does that make you want to read it? Because
makes me want to read it.
That's what this book,
you know,
book is.
I think people were generally on board with Poyo, the most beloved badass chicken of all time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it is sort of about how awesome Poyo is, and I don't want to, you know, spoil anything because there's a lot in here.
I heard you laughing at it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's just a laugh out loud funny. And of course, they do these big giant splash pages of Poyo fighting something, and it's. This I will spoil because it's hilarious. The cosmic combat, the Poyo versus Galaxiel.
they're Galactus.
Well, no, they're Eternity. That's sort of a seal.
Nice.
And they have the Enterprise flying through him, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rob Gilroy is amazing with his little just throwing in stuff in the mix.
Yeah.
And really, this is just a fun one-off. You don't have to have read anything about Chew before. It gives you a great rundown if you really need it.
You know,
honestly, just a one page thing.
I had two people yesterday call in to request this book specifically. It's like I feel like it's the buzz book of the week.
Well, it's hilarious and it deserves to be. And I honestly think more people need to check out Chew if you haven't. It's just one of those books that constantly makes you laugh, but it also tells a really good story.
You know, I've had several people start picking up the trades of late. I think people are catching that book again.
I have noticed that too.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly deserves it. I think John Layman and Rob Guillory have done a great thing, and it's, what, 60 issues? 60th yeah, they, issue comes up, what, next
we're
month?
We're coming up on it
after?
Soon. It's not, that's Sixth Gun.
Okay.
Chu's still got one more story arc.
Oh, does it? I thought it was actually nearing.
Chu ends this year, I think, but it's not.
Been, they've shown their proper devotion. They've shown their devotion to their creation.
Yeah. It's going to get a good ending. It's not going to go on hiatus and vanish away forever. Yeah.
And then before Randy,
the ending could stink.
And then before Randy gets to his giant.
I was
going to
say
pile
let's,
of
let's
stuff.
Change up this week. Let's have you guys talk about your other stuff first, and I'll wrap it up.
I want to talk about a couple of Deadpool things because the week is not complete.
Nick, I was going to cover Deadpool.
Oh, you were? Well,
do
I will. Well, I will.
You ready to call that bluff?
The first volume of the new series hits trade this week.
Yep,
it's first six issues, I think. Fantastic stuff. The fourth issue of Spider-Man Deadpool comes out, and it's a double date, as you might think, with Spider-Man. A person and Deadpool and Lady Thor. So if you can imagine that
Deadpool
going awry.
Deadpool knows secret identity?
Spider-Man?
Yeah. Okay.
No,
doing like
not.
Superhero
but, Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness continue to just sort of hit the high notes. It's amazing stuff.
I forgot it's like it was Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness.
Yeah, that's
the kind
classic
of the
Deadpool
the
team.
Yeah.
And they're just doing fantastic stuff. The ninth issue of Extraordinary X-Men, which... I think is the second, no, third part. A third part of the Apocalypse Wars. And this one is definitely delving a little bit deeper into the story, dealing with Colossus and the sort of young mutants as they kind of cross over into different worlds in the future. It's very interesting. Some great art by Ramos.
Umberto
Ramos. The sixth issue of Mighty Thor, which is Loki telling a story. It is beautifully rendered by... Russell Dodderman and Matthew Wilson. Then there's the 50th issue of The Flash, which I just randomly picked up because I kind of wanted to see
how
what things were.
Drawn to a close.
And there's a Flash going up against a very unexpected villain, which I think was great. So
can you say who it is? Because I thought it was a cool idea.
No, because it's a last page reveal. We don't want to do that. But it is basically Flash having to deal with his entire rogues gallery. Everybody from Mirror Master to Metal to tons of other characters. So it's interesting. And then, of course, the 10th issue of Deadpool, which I forgot to mention. But that's him versus a Sabretooth, which has been fun.
Sure. Dave, what else is on your stack?
Let's see. So, Randy, this is normally your call, but I'm going to mention it here. It's Sam Wilson, Captain America.
Yep.
I did get around to reading this issue, which continues. It's part of the standoff.
It's actually the final chapter before Omega, which will wrap the whole thing up.
Okay. And it sees an interesting there's some interesting downtime as Cap Steve is coming to terms with his new youthful self, but also what that means for his relationship and friendship and the occasional frenemyship. With Falcon Cap, Sam Wilson, and with Winter Soldier, both of whom
I loved seeing all the stuff between those three sort of had been Caps.
There's also some interesting behind the scenes stuff with the big bad guys, with Zemo and his guys.
And I love the villains.
That was really good.
And there's a very cool reveal as to one of his agents in this.
Yep.
Definitely wouldn't want to reveal it, but it was a cool one. But I think I missed an issue somewhere in here, but I found that I was able to just jump right in on this one, and it was another very good issue.
Yeah, one thing I liked about the standoff crossover in general is that it's been telling related stories. They all spin out from the very notion of Pleasant Hill.
Yeah.
But you don't have to read every issue. Like, if you just read New Avengers, you're getting a complete story. If you just read Cap, you're getting a complete story. If you just read all New, all different Avengers, it's like the same. It's like elements of the story told from different points of view.
One of those cheap-ass crossovers.
Where you have to read every issue.
If you don't read it, you're screwed.
I'm actually I'm a little relieved that Nick Spencer can write a good Cap.
Yeah.
Like Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
I know he was writing a good Falcon.
But you were worried.
But I was worried because I didn't know if that was a possibility. Yeah. But he
and
writes
Cap,
a really good job.
He's kind of a snarky guy, and Cap is anything but snarky.
Yeah, it's true.
I also wanted to mention the hardcover collection, the first collection of Alan Moore's Providence, which is the final chapter of his Neonomicon Lovecraft nod. Begins here. Now, this is not the whole story. This is issues like 1 through 4 of the series, and I think it's going to go to like 12 issues or something.
Yeah.
It's a big series, so there will be more collections. There will be two more collections, I guess. But I know that I was enjoying it as it was coming out, but it was also kind of slow-paced, as Alan Moore can sometimes be. So I will be anxious to read this and get them all back-to-back.
This is fancy. It's got some special features.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a limited hardcover. I believe they'll put a trade out eventually, but right now this is just the hardcover.
I know it's got all the text stuff that he was writing in there. I didn't know what else was in it. I think it looks like it may just be... there's more. That's all the text pieces. I don't know that I see actually a whole lot of in it, okay, other than okay. It's right. It's a nice looking hardcover, yep. And has all that stuff.
There you go.
I wanted to mention the weird zombie manga,
yeah.
I Am a Hero,
yeah.
That came out in a big old omnibus today. This I only had time to glance at. It's crazy beautiful to look at. Really detailed in the style of stuff, something like Berserk or... Battle Royale?
Really
elaborately drawn ones.
Yeah.
You got to see it. Flip through it, even if you're not a manga person. I wasn't sure if I was connecting with the story as I was kind of flipping through it, but it definitely seems worth a look. It seems weird beyond just the zombie element. Like, it's almost really like if David Lynch did a zombie movie or something.
Yeah.
And then lastly, there's a few trades I want to mention. These are ones that I haven't had time to read yet, but I'm vouching for or I'm interested in. New Astro City, the Lover's Quarrel storyline, which I know I like.
Yes.
Follows the aging, the adventure of the aging Crackerjack and his on again, off again love interest quarrel.
Yeah, I've got that one in hardcover. It's a great collection.
Yeah. Oh, hardcover.
I can't wait.
DC's got a coloring book out called Coloring DC Mad Love. It's the beautiful art of Bruce Timm on Mad Love. So if you want to bust out your crayons, your colored pencils or whatever, and color in Joker and Harley and Batman as drawn by the master, then this is your book.
Yeah.
Flash by Grant Morrison and Mark Miller.
Yep.
Always wanted to read their short-lived, but...
It's a 12-issue run.
I'll read it a run by a couple of Mad Scotsmen.
Yep.
I got to check it out. And then, finally, there's a Star Wars character encyclopedia that came out this week. This is one of those... I think it's DK Books has got it, right?
Yeah, it's like updated and revised.
Yeah, so it's got all the Force Awakens characters in it. Beautiful art, as you would expect from them. Or not art, but photography.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's my list, Randy.
All right. Well, I'll start with the trades, which, again, I haven't necessarily read all... Actually, I think I've read everything that is collected. So the first volume of Captain America, Sam Wilson, which I'm very excited by. I really love that book. And so... Excited to get to that. There's an Elseworlds Batman, which one thing exciting about that is that DC was not doing Elseworlds at all.
And they're
finally putting them out. And this collection is a great collection. It's got Holy Terror, which is probably my favorite. It's a, what's the word for it?
Theocracy.
It's sort of a corrupt theocracy. Batman is a part of it as Bruce Wayne until he finds out it's corrupt.
Yep.
And it's got beautiful art by Norm Breifogel. It was written by legendary Alan Brennert.
But because of like the touchy subject matter, DC has not ever reprinted it. So this is a rare gem and a really good one.
There's also a futuristic one in here called Robin 3000 that sees this is right about the height of Tim Drake being invented. They did a futuristic where a kid in the year 3000 discovers the legacy of Batman and Robin and becomes a Robin in this sort of futuristic world.
Uh-huh.
There is Dark Joker, which is a fantasy
one. I don't know that one.
He's an evil wizard. Batman is a warrior who defeats him. There's In Darkest Night, which is Batman if he got the Green Lantern ring.
Yep.
And then there's Dark Allegiances, which is a Howard Chaykin set in the 1930s. And if you know Howard Chaykin, you know exactly what I mean from there.
You know what's interesting? This when we talked about all these cool Elseworlds, I say people pick this up, let DC know that you're behind the Elseworlds thing so they will continue to do more of them.
Two more things that are sort of modern stuff is the All New All Different Avengers Volume 1 trade by Mark Waid and Andy Kubert and Mahmoud Azrar. I love this book. It's brought the Avengers back that I wanted. It's got Miss Marvel and Miles Morales and Nova in it, along with the new, Falcon Cap and Lady Thor. It's really, really great. I love this book. The only reason I might not pick up the trade is I'm holding out hope for a hardcover. But very excited about that. And then Vader Down, which is the crossover between Star Wars and Darth Vader that sees Vader's crashed TIE fighter and all the rebels trying to bring him in and the chaos that ensues from that.
We talked that up definitely as it was coming out.
Yep.
Really cool action adventure. Yeah, basically, like it's like the fugitive from the point of view of a bad guy.
And then a couple more retro trades. Nightwing Volume 4, Love and Bullets, which is more of the Chuck Dixon Nightwing, which for my money is still the best Nightwing that's been done.
And Solo Adventures and Blood.
This has Huntress in it.
This has Huntress in it as well. It's Nightwing, and it's also got Nightwing 1 million.
Oh, I like that one.
So there's some cool stuff in here. And then a throwback to sort of the early 2000s, Hawkeye and Thunderbolts, which Thunderbolts started off when the Avengers were missing in action. They were over in the Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee-verse.
The heroes were born.
When they come back and the Thunderbolts were revealed, Hawkeye, being a former criminal himself, sort of took over the Thunderbolts and was trying to keep them on the straight and narrow as a guy who had become a major Avenger and was now a hero, but knew what it was like to be on that early redemption path.
Yeah.
And
makes a lot of sense.
It starts off as Kurt Busiek. It moves on to Fabian Nicieza stuff. It's really good stuff. And I've liked every era of the Thunderbolts, and I'm a huge Hawkeye fan, so this was really fun stuff. Then on to the single issues that I got this week. Oh, also, Cleopatra in Space Volume 3 is this week.
Yep.
Which, I love that book. It's got beautiful art by Mike Mayak. So Marvel put out a ton of stuff I like this week. The New Avengers, number 10, is part of the standoff. It has beautiful art by Marcus Toe. It features the American Kaiju, which is a... they made a fanatic American soldier into a Godzilla versus Ames... like five-way consciousness powered giant robot. So anyone with a fondness for Pacific Rim.
Looks like a big old Shogun warrior looking thing.
There's also great stuff in here with Rick Jones, with Songbird being an undercover S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. The whole thing with AIM being sort of a Roberto Costa bought AIM and is trying to use it for good. Sounded kind of crazy, but now I'm kind of liking it.
Yeah.
And I really like this. It's a good issue of New Avengers. Standoff brought me into this book, and I will probably keep reading it. Silk number 7 is another part of the Spider-Women crossover, and it's a great chapter of it. It has artist Tana Ford, just beautiful artwork, and has Cindy Moon discovering that her evil duplicate is the one who's been behind the whole thing.
Right, I want to rewind for just a second. Yeah. What is it? New Avengers you just
yep,
did?
Yep.
That is the Deadpool book, right? Deadpool's in that
too? No, that's Uncanny Avengers.
Okay, just checking, because I was like... Did you sidestep the fact that you were talking up with Deadpool?
No.
Okay.
No. I've always mentioned when Deadpool's Uncanny Avengers, even if I like it. Also this week, Astonishing Ant-Man number 7, Captain Marvel number 4, two of my favorite Marvel books. And then coming out from Image, we've got Huck number 6, which is the finale.
Yes.
And is really, really good. Aloha Hawaiian Dick number 1, which is a story of a 50s detective in Hawaii, although this seems to be almost more of a... general sort of 50s mysteries and PIs and that kind of thing. This is a book that it was one of our early promotions. I think we were in Dragon's Lair. It was
just called Hawaiian Dick.
We actually...
That's Dick for detective people.
Yes, for detective. we actually gave people Lay's and pineapple sodas if they bought the first issue.
Yep. It was like an early buzz book of yep. ours that we were like, oh... We can just tell people what's good, and they'll try it.
Yep.
It was an interesting discovery.
And also this week from Image, the Lazarus Sourcebook, which is the a Marvel Universe-style sourcebook of the Lazarus world. It's got everything from maps...
That's Ed Brubaker's Lazarus.
No, his, Greg Rucka's Lazarus.
Greg Rucka's, yes, that's right. They're the same guy.
It's Greg Rucka and Michael Lark's futuristic book, which we've talked about before. Yeah. But this is basically... everything from sort of maps and overviews of the family to talking about the media of like TV shows in this world. And there's little diagrams and blueprints of their military technology. It is a really cool source book for a world that is really well developed.
Yeah, I saw that it even shows like, here's what the printed money looks like yeah. and everything, yep. you know.
Awesome. It's really cool. And finally, Valiant Comics, which you don't talk about very often, has their new book, Divinity 2, number 1. This is a book about a cosmonaut who is sent up an experimental ship and comes back with sort of godlike powers. And that was what the first Divinity is about. This is about the other cosmonaut who maybe is going to be pitted against him. It's got beautiful painted art. It is outside of their universe in a way. And so it is sort of a almost more of a standalone science fiction book. Definitely worth a look. And that is comics for the week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about podcasts and some TV. Okay, so we're going to start out talking about some podcasts we've been listening to.
Yeah.
Notably, the one that the Welcome to Night Vale people have done.
Yes.
It's under their Night Vale Presents umbrella. It's a limited series. It's eight episodes, I think.
Yeah. Eight or 12, I think.
Okay.
I forget.
But Dave, you've been listening to this one.
Yeah, Alice Isn't Dead is the name of it. And the lead, it's essentially a narrative from one woman. It's all sort of her, it's almost her internal monologue.
It's like her diary, right? Like an audio diary kind of thing?
It's really more just like you're in her head.
I feel like...
She's talking to her ex, though.
Often, I feel like she's on a mic when driving.
Right.
It's
slightly surreal, but yeah, it feels like she could be telling you this over the radio because she is a truck driver.
Yes.
Or she's taken that up while she's in search of her ex-wife. Who
just randomly left her one day,
right? But I think she hasn't heard from her since.
Correct.
But there's definitely a vibe that something sinister has happened to her.
Yeah.
Like Night Vale, there's sinister things are all around.
Yeah.
But here they definitely have more weight. It's still not like wholly realistic. But it feels to use the David Lynch thing again. It feels a little David Lynchy to me.
It does. But it also feels much darker than anything Night Vale,
right?
Has done.
There's a very eerie sequence in the first episode when she goes into a truck stop.
Yep.
Is it, or is it a convenience store?
It's a truck stop. Kind of like a cafe, not a cafe, but
she has some strange things that occur to her just beyond just. Like, for instance, she'll drive through a town and then drive through it again a few minutes later.
Yeah.
And it'll keep recurring and things like that, while she also, reminisces about their time together but when she's in this truck stop, she sees this creepy guy. What do they call him, Nick?
Oh.
It's something he has just on his shirt on a tag.
Yeah.
Like, Shiver.
No, it's like the name of some...
I forget, but it's something innocuous. It'd be like if you called somebody the Shiver Man,
yeah,
or something like that, based on seeing that. And yeah, it's annoying that we can't remember it. But he's got like I remember the description. He's got like yellowing nails,
and sort of like semi-translucent skin,
but not like monstrous.
No,
like not that he would like people would like be like but something definitely just
off-putting. Yeah, yeah.
And he definitely seems to know something about what's going on. The story builds in kind of an interesting, would you say, like, not quite dreamlike way, Nick, but there is a certain surrealness.
Yeah, it's got a dreamlike quality to it.
I have to say, I wasn't fully on board this one after the first episode.
I wasn't either.
I felt the first episode was very disjointed in a lot of ways and sort of haphazard and all over the place.
You think?
And
because it is like, I mean, it's very straightforward, though, when you think about it. It's like, she tells you what's going on, and it sort of, it does build to this kind of creepy conclusion. She was also doing,
there was the weird time jump when she was talking, like she would...
Correct.
It was like, she
would be mid-talking, and you would hear, like, the mic cut.
Cut, and then do something else, and then a few minutes later, she'd come back to where she was. So it was just... It kind of utilized some of that Pulp Fiction weirdness.
Yeah. It is clearly part of it, but it was a little disconcerting at first. I do agree.
But after the second episode was better.
Yep.
And then the third episode.
Is the second episode the thing where there's something rattling around in the back of her truck?
No, that's the third one.
That's the third one.
And
okay.
The third one.
The second
really
is the one where she where she's goes through the town a few times.
I believe that is right.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because I've heard the first and second.
And the third one, without saying too much about it. She has this recurring thing where she's hearing something moving around in the back of her truck.
Yeah.
And, like, she checks on it, and there's nothing back there, but she's like, it really sounds like footsteps and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's very creepy, and maybe definitely the most intense episode. Yeah.
Yes. But it's got me hooked, and now I'm kind of very curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, I've been like, well, I was with you, Nick, in that I was not sold on it immediately. But after that third episode, I've actually been checking my podcast stuff like almost daily. I'm like, is it updated yet? Is it updated yet? Why is it taking so long?
That's how I am with the Black Tapes.
Yeah.
Which is on a weird hiatus, although...
There was a little bit.
There was a 5-minute episode that they released.
They finally released Alex's sleep tapes.
Yeah, they did the first sleep tape, which was interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess
it just popped like
last
Monday?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Monday.
No, I haven't heard it then.
Which is interesting. So... Yeah, I've
been kind of waiting for them to do more.
There are several podcasts that I like. I do go back on my phone and like, is there a new episode? Is there a new episode? So Alice Isn't Dead, the fourth one popped up today. So
cool.
I'm definitely looking forward
to it. When you told
me
that earlier, I was very excited. So
I'm going to give a shout out to a podcast that I'm actually on an episode of.
Wow.
So this is by some friends of mine. They do a podcast called TVI.
Yeah.
Which former employee of ours, Nate Bliss, and his buddy Mike Moody.
Yep.
Mike is doing a podcast called Mr. Robot O. It's O-H.
Yeah.
And it is specifically about the show Mr. Robot. They're doing an episode-by-episode breakdown of the USA show Mr. Robot. Pretty in-depth. Each episode, I think, is about an hour, hour and a half. Wow. And it's definitely more edited than most of the podcasts I'm on. Like, he goes in and tightens it up and gives a little more of that professional thing. Not unlike – not ours, which we just record and just slap up just on the internet.
Whatever a couple of basically gibbons say when you put them in a room together.
Pretty much. So this is a – I'm going to be on episode 4, I believe. But I believe episode 1 and 2 are up now. It is available on iTunes. And if you are a fan of the Mr. Robot show, definitely go give this a listen. It's a good podcast.
I really need to watch that show.
I wanted to double back though to the one that Dave that I think I may have talked about or maybe not, but that you just listened to a little while back, The Message.
Yeah, and I think I kind of like this better than you guys. But it is something of a piece with the likes of Black Tapes and what's the other one?
Tannis, but it's more contained.
It is. It's like 8 episodes. They're only they maybe range between 15 and minutes and maybe short. Half an hour for like the final one.
Yeah.
But The Message imagines it's like the other ones. It's it's supposed to be a podcast that was like originally a linguistics podcast, kind of like listened to by like 50 people or something like that.
Yeah.
That through kind of a series of circumstances ends up being called on to look out into a government. Or like a sanctioned project for a signal that might be from extraterrestrial source.
And it's been around for a long, long time.
It goes back to World War II.
Yep.
It was by a signal station.
It has not been fully deciphered yet, or like it hasn't been. Yeah, there was a signal station in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, they're kind of like, it's almost like they're like, okay, let's just crowdsource it. We can't get.
Yeah. They're like, they're basically like, we're never going to get this. We just basically declassified it for you. It's. We don't know what's going to happen. We want somebody to figure out what this message is.
So she ends up taking it on and like working with a team of researchers who have to kind of go through put it through the standards of like sort of SETI does of like you know determining whether it's whether was it definitely an extraterrestrial signal is there repetition and then. Fairly quickly, it starts out. I'm going to say it is a little dry at first.
Yeah,
I had actually listened to the first episode like a year back or something, and I've got to start thinking about this when I do these podcasts. That sometimes the first episode takes a little, almost ease into it.
Almost always. Is there any podcast that grabbed us first? Like even Tannis and Black Tapes, like we didn't grab from the first one.
I know I didn't like Night Vale from the
Night
start.
Vale at start.
And I'm about to go and see it live for the third time in like a month or two.
I think there's a lesson there in the podcast. You have to give a couple of episodes at least.
Well, I was pretty sold with Black Tapes, I have to say, after that first episode.
Yeah, it's a pretty good first one. It's very creepy. But The Message does start off a little bit dry. It feels like it's going to be more of like a science-y kind of thing where the team is an interesting group. You know, it's kind of it's an interesting crew of characters. One of them is a trans woman. Yeah. I like the interplay between them. But very rapidly, something occurs in it that changes how things are going.
Yeah,
that gives it an immediacy, a sense of danger.
Yeah.
It ties back in creepily to some reveals about the World War II signals and the people who've been decoding it. And to say too much more about the plot would give too much away, but it has big twists and turns in fairly rapid succession because they don't have, like they were saying, there's not a lot of time to it. I had some qualms maybe with the finale, but I sort of appreciated that they went bold.
Yeah,
they did go pretty bold with it. And there's some pretty dramatic tension too, especially in like the next to last episode and the last episode.
Yeah,
it was unpredictable. Like when it began, it was not what I expected it to be. I thought it was going to be like this sort of Michael Crichton-esque. Slow burn thriller that eventually
it's got some of that.
But there, and now that I think about it, the same way his kind of build to almost to chase sequences, whether it's Jurassic
Park
think or whatever,
kind of modeled a little bit off.
Yeah,
of Crichton.
You're right.
Yeah.
I think I was just expecting like it might be there would be more of the sciencey stuff, and it is still sciencey throughout, but.
It becomes character driven pretty early on.
Yeah,
I actually thought the voice acting they got for it was quite good.
Yep. I would put it to me roughly on par with Black Tapes and stuff like that.
This is why I say you should go back and listen to Limetown. I think you'd
you
like
should.
It.
I'm considering it.
You should give Limetown another shot.
Limetown quickly becomes something.
Yeah, that, where's my season two of Limetown?
No kidding.
Is there supposed to be?
It's very much a cliffhanger.
Just out of curiosity, where would y'all rank that against, say, Black Tapes and Tannis?
Black Tapes and Tannis are both better.
Better, but I put this over The Message.
Okay. Yeah, I also put Limetown over The Message.
Better than The Message.
Yeah.
Mainly because after that first episode, it goes in different directions.
Yeah, Limetown is more ambitious than The Message in some ways.
Very much so.
Okay, I want to talk about another podcast. This is a channel. It's Channel 33.
Uh-huh.
It's a podcast feed. It's actually Bill Simmons, who's a big guy who did like ESPN. Mm-hmm. He very publicly left with the ESPN and took a lot of his people with him and went to HBO. And they haven't done a ton of stuff with HBO right now, but he's got a podcast network. And that podcast network includes all manner of pop culture. They do, of all things, like a golf podcast, which I don't listen to, and some other sports podcasts, but they also do pop culture. So,
of golf podcast, by the way, sounds like my nightmare, but I'm betting those people make it interesting.
It's supposed to be good, yeah.
I don't doubt that anybody can come up with can make something interesting at this point.
The one that I really like is called The Watch. It's by Chris Ryan and Andy Greenwald, who are guys who are going to be doing the post-show Game of Thrones show on HBO.
Oh, okay.
They're TV critics. I've been following them for a while. They're funny. They've got that vibe, kind of. I think that we get going sometimes where they kind of have private running jokes.
That awesome.
They're that awesome. They definitely got sort of that running jokes and sort of banter between them.
Okay, yeah.
And they talk about whatever TV is going on. I don't always agree with them. For example, they think Better Call Saul is boring, and I think they're insane because it's one of my favorite shows. But it's interesting to listen to. And the other one I'm listening to is called Keeping It 1600. It is a political podcast by a couple guys who I gather used to work in the Obama White House.
Huh.
And I've heard two episodes so far. And basically what they do is they talk about, you know, the elections and that kind of stuff in politics. But then they have a guest. So they previously had a guest who they believe is sort of their stealth VP pick. I don't remember his name. Something Perez, who is a guy who is, I believe, currently our Secretary of Health, or maybe Human – I don't remember which –
one of those ones that nobody can remember.
He's
usually.
He's Health and Human Services, maybe. I don't know. He's okay. He's like one of the big and really interesting guy. And you never hear politicians – guys who work in politics, you don't hear them drop their guard.
Yeah.
These guys, since they sort of know these guys, they talk pretty frankly about the realities of politics and sort of
really interesting
Hillary versus Bernie and that kind of stuff. And Perez, of course, works in the Obama White House. He's campaigning for Hillary. And then so they brought on the next week Cal Penn, who also worked for the Obama White House, who is, of course, from Harold and Kumar and 24. But he went to work for Obama for a while there and is a political guy. And so they talked to him, and he's a Bernie supporter. And they sort of talked about that, and they're like, why Bernie? And it's – like I say, I've only heard two episodes so far. It's definitely left-leaning. But I really, really dug this podcast.
Say the name of it again?
Keeping It 1600.
Got it.
Which I think is a new name, and they're sort of making fun of it still. but I really dug it. And there's plenty of stuff on this Channel 33 that I'm sure is good, but they put out podcasts basically every day.
Yeah.
So I just go through it. Mark has played the ones I'm not going to listen to and listen to a couple every week. But yeah, really, really good podcasts. All right. Moving on to TV stuff. Nick, you and I want to talk about Star Wars Rebels Season 2.
Yes.
So, spoilers, if you're not caught up on Star Wars Rebels Season 2, go ahead and wrap here. You might miss our People vs. O.J. Simpson discussion. You might not. Depends on how long we talk.
Right.
But there will be spoilers, and we want to warn you. Dave, we're about to spoil Star Wars Rebels Season 2 for you.
It's all right. I'll forget it.
Yeah. Rebels Season 2.
It was very interesting, because it had this weird flow to it, because at the beginning it's all about sort of the team, all the other characters.
Yep.
We get some great moments with, like, the introduction of the B-Wing.
Yeah, the B-Wing story was great.
It was fantastic.
I remember seeing that just from the trailers and stuff. Was that, like, is that some Admiral Akbar initiative?
No, it was it's a Mon Calamari ship designer.
Okay. Yes. Okay, yes. Maybe that's what I saw.
They're not all the same races.
Yeah, they are. They are. Basically the same.
But it also had other, you know, just tons of different storylines. The Chopper storyline about him getting his own another leg.
That was cool. They dealt with Ezra's family in a way I did not expect.
No, I did not expect that.
This is a show that, like Clone Wars or Young Justice, that is aimed at kids, but they managed to go a little darker.
They do. I mean, Clone Wars did that as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have a general question.
Yes.
How episodic is it versus how mythology, you know, long-term
it's
storytelling?
It's pretty arc.
Yeah,
it's pretty arc-based.
Story arc.
I mean,
there are a few episodic
episodes. I mean, the episodes are always pretty standalone, but they definitely, there's a definitely continuity. I mean, like, they brought the clones back, and then Rex became a regular cast member, which I loved.
They also dealt with, I can never remember the big guy, the strong guy. Why can't I remember?
Zeb,
his backstory with his race and sort of what he meant to his race.
The,
and I thought that was really cool.
The Enemy Mind style episode where he and the, not the Inquisitor, Kallus, land on the planet and have to sort of deal with each other. Kallus, like, basically is almost like genocidal against his people, and the two managed to find some common ground. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
The sort of the Warrior's Honor Code kind of thing that they've done when you crashed with an enemy soldier was really well done.
And honestly, I mean, towards the end of the season, you get into the arc of the Jedi and sort of what that means to Kanan, what that means to Ezra.
Well, and the big moment everybody's been waiting for is Ahsoka versus Darth Vader.
Yeah, and you knew it was kind of coming.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew they had to address it.
It wasn't as definitive as I thought it would be, though.
No, but before we get into that, the final episode, which was like the hour-long episode.
Twilight of the Apprentice.
Was basically Kanan, Ezra, and Ahsoka going to a Sith temple, which is something I don't know if we've seen much of.
No.
Especially in sort of the animation style.
And
upon getting there, I think they get separated.
They get separated out. So Ezra is on his own, and Ahsoka and Kanan are on their own.
And they're all sort of trying to find, I mean, essentially a holocron or something like that, that would give them information. Yoda gives
Ezra a clue that
this is where they need to go. And one of the big things that happens is Ezra meets a certain person.
And an older version of a character who appears to be sort of a wise master now. And when they reveal who it is, you're like, holy crap.
Yeah. I don't know if we want to spoil that.
Probably shouldn't. You and I both know what we mean.
Yeah.
It was pretty great, though, and I love the arc they take him on in that episode.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Continuation.
It's a character that got a lot of rejuvenation work in Clone Wars, and they just continue to do it here. So, really good.
I have another question.
Yep.
So I don't know how many Jedis are revealed to have survived Order 66, whether it's just Ahsoka or there's other ones. I don't know if that's something you can say.
So Ahsoka, Kanan, who was a Padawan.
Right,
yeah.
Ahsoka was also a Padawan, and they're going to get into a novel of how she sort of fled away from the whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ahsoka, there's a reason she escaped Order 66.
And then, of course, Ezra has the same sort of Luke journey where he was Force-sensitive and Kanan brings that out in him, but that's it, right? There's not any other Jedi.
Because I know that, like, there's always been, like, I can't remember if it was you, Randy, but, like, maybe a fear that in needing to have Jedi in there that they might kind of obnoxiously shoehorn them in and make out that the, you know, decimation of the Jedi was not quite as...
I mean, at this point...
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, Yoda's still alive.
Yeah, Yoda's still alive, but
Obi-Wan is still alive.
Right.
Yeah.
But they haven't introduced... Like, they've introduced three more Dark Jedi, the Inquisitors.
The Inquisitors.
And, cool. And yeah, they're cool. They're badass.
I swear one of them looks like Barriss.
I think so, too. I don't think it is.
No, but...
Because I think they would have addressed it by now, but she looks like Barriss.
Especially with Ahsoka and stuff like that, but...
Yeah, but yeah, there's... I'm always a little wary of them introducing any other Jedi because it cuts away at the narrative of Star Wars where Luke was the last hope.
Right.
But, I mean, I'd be nervous about, for example, like, Yoda doesn't make contact with anybody until Luke, so it's weird for him to be contacting Ezra, but it's done so well that it gets past my skepticism.
Right. Well, that's kind of like Force Awakens. A lot of Force Awakens have things that I would otherwise have been skeptical about.
Yeah.
But was really well done.
But if it's well done, you'll forgive a lot.
A lot of comes down to execution.
And yeah.
Is this still Greg Weisman, or he left?
He left, but it's Dave Filoni, who's been involved for Clone Wars a long time.
And we trust.
Yeah.
And hasn't been let down
I guess yet. At some point I should go back and watch the last few seasons of Clone Wars.
Oh, if you haven't done
since
that.
I've never finished Clone Wars. I don't know, Dave, you haven't finished the last Clone Wars, right?
Both of you guys need to. Yeah. It has such great finales.
I do need to catch up. I'm only in like mid-season 4, I think.
You don't have Rebels to watch anymore. Go watch Clone Wars.
Yeah, but I have 100 other things to watch. all right. One more quick thing we're going to hit. Nick and I have both watched. Again, spoilers. If you haven't seen People vs. O.J. Simpson... I don't want to spoil anything for you, but O.J. Simpson gets off. No, this was...
And that really wasn't the I mean,
no, this is
that's the conclusion, but that wasn't the biggest thing. Yeah.
This is a 10-episode series on FX. It's a new anthology series called American Crime Story, which is sort of the companion to American Horror Story.
Yeah.
But they've sort of downplayed that story and played it up as People vs. O.J. Simpson as its own thing. It was great.
It was.
And I did not expect... I mean, I was around when the O.J. Simpson thing happened. I remember sort of how sensational it was. And I thought I pretty much knew all of it. But as they went through and did it, there was stuff that I'd forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
There was stuff I didn't know. This is based on a book by Jeffrey Toobin, I think, or Toobin?
Yeah. Oh, that's the guy who was, like, the longtime legal advisor. Yeah. Like, he's, like, the legal reporter for, like, CNN and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He did a book called The Run of His Life, and they based it on that. And Ryan Murphy is at the head of this, and you'd think that means, like, schlocky or over extreme.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's very character-focused. It gets all the big moments. I mean, the O.J. Simpson was sort of extreme and over the top in general.
Oh,
but,
yeah, just the...
But it's all, I mean...
Well, I was like, I guess my late teens when it happened.
Yeah.
And I was aware of it on a pop cultural level.
Yeah.
But I don't think I really engaged with it like I would be interested to do now.
Right.
Or occurring now. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually really interested to catch this.
I remember watching, like, the Bronco Chase.
At
school and... Even some of the trial, it was bizarre.
Well, this was just a fascinating series. The character work, the cast was amazing. Okay. Courtney Vance as Johnny Cochran.
Oh, Johnny Cochran, yeah.
Johnny Cochran is one of the guys who you kind of want. You're supposed to hate him. He's kind of this lazy lawyer. Everybody, but they really go into the sort of the racial issues of L.A. They do this great opening scene where he's like pulled over when he's working as a district attorney for. LA for Los Angeles, and he gets pulled over by a cop driving his daughters to like get ice cream.
Uh-huh.
And this cop is disrespectful, and he just treats him like basically a criminal, and he like puts him on the hood of his car. And Johnny's like, he's like, go check. It's very uncomfortable. Johnny's like, go check who I am before you do this. You want to check who I am. And he finally gets out of there. The cop doesn't apologize to him.
Yeah.
And this is like, he is basically at the height of being a sort of powerful figure, and he's treated no differently because he's a black man.
Yeah.
And you sort of see where Johnny Cochran comes from, and you get all these different angles. And then they do this brilliant thing where he and F. Lee Bailey, played beautifully by Nathan Lane, go down south to get a judge.
Oh, man.
And Johnny cannot work down there. He needs F. Lee Bailey to step in and be like, look, You can't do the same thing here that you do in L.A. It's got to be a different kind of justice.
What was the line? It was like, you're gonna look around you. You're standing by the statue.
He's like there's a soldier. There's a Confederate soldier there. Yeah.
But
I really want to see this series.
Honestly, I think for me the story that was most interesting, and I mean they all have great story arcs, but I'm gonna blank on her name.
Sarah Paulson,
who plays Marcia Clark.
She's great in
and
this.
And the actor who plays Chris Darden.
Yeah, who I blank on his name.
Both are superb.
Yeah, their story's great. The focused episode on Marcia.
Yeah.
Was so good and shows so much of. I mean, she's a villain of the piece too, and that she makes some big screw ups.
She does. I mean, everybody here makes screw ups, and that's sort of the nature of it. And they also got he's in Star Trek. Why am I blanking on
Chris? Bruce Greenwood. Bruce Greenwood plays the district attorney.
And, you know, seeing him involved in that. I mean,
Everybody
gets their moment. And
there's also, I mean, they did an episode that was focused on the jury. It was sort of what it would be like to be on an 8-month-long jury.
And it's as crazy and...
And there's also... There's also fun in there. I mean, like, the jury, when there comes a point where they're trying to, basically, one side is trying to get rid of all the white jurors, and one side is trying to get rid of all the black jurors, and it is a montage set to Another One Bites the Dust by Queen.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
But it also opens up with them sort of getting put into, like, a hotel.
Yeah.
And them being very excited because, I can watch whatever I want, I can do whatever I do. And they realize that all like
television's gone, they can't get magazines.
And it feels very much, very prison-like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, the title of the episode is very much in something in the prison.
Yeah.
I can't remember specifically. But
overall,
I think this was well executed.
Yeah, this was definitely, it's leading in my sort of best new TV of the year. It's up there.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see what they do next. They've said that they're doing, like, what, the Hurricane
Katrina?
They're
going to
do
something in Katrina. It's going to go sort of bigger. And I think that's a smart move.
It's ambitious.
Yeah.
Katrina sounds really interesting as a topic.
So this is all, if you have FX, if you have cable, I think it's all available on FX now.
Right.
But it's definitely worth worth picking up. It's one of the best TV shows you'll see all year.
I agree.
All right. I have a couple more shows I want to talk about, but we're running low on time, so I might catch that next time. So we will wrap it up there. And until next time,
Yo Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.